came to expect. Kind of in keeping with the whole permaculture thing, I'm actually starting an 8-part series today. I put out an announcement on the blog yesterday that said, hey, I'm going to do this 8-part series about applying permaculture principles to your business. And in a way that, like, you know, when people hear permaculture, they think of gardening and farming and trees and stuff, and there's a lot of that there. But if you never plant a seed, a tree, or a bush one, the stuff I'm going to tell you today and over the next 8 episodes is going to be kind of groundbreaking and a different way to look at your business. And the reason I'm doing it is I think that most people don't really understand business. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And I think that when we take something like permaculture, which we all see as being agricultural-based, and realize it's just a troubleshooting methodology, we realize we can apply it to anything. And when we apply a troubleshooting method to a system before we actually use it or while it's being used and not broken yet, we can optimize it. The other reason I'm doing this is because of what permaculture really means. It does not mean planting a tree instead of a piece of corn. It means permanent culture. It's creating sustainability. Now, this is something I want for my businesses. I want them to be sustainable. I want them to go on beyond me. I want them to create communities. I want them to create interactions. I want them to create other businesses. I want them to create spin-offs. I want them to create other sectors. I want them to inspire people. I want them to be so well loved by my customers that they never go away, even if I do. That's sustainability. So when I look for sustainability in the world, the only place I really see it being done right is in the permaculture world. So my thought was, can I take that and bring it over to business? So I found this article a while ago, and I've been kicking this series around in my head for months. It's called 8 Forms of Capital, and it was in Permaculture Magazine out of the UK. And I found where it's published online by a group called Appleseed Permaculture. And the reason I'm giving you guys all this introduction into this is so that maybe you'll subscribe to my email list if you're not so already, because I don't need Jack's email list because, well, I get his show with iTunes. But, like, you could have read this article yesterday and been all ready for this if you were on my email list. And if you weren't, now you got to go read the article if you really want to gain the most from this, this 8-part series. But there is a link to the 8 Forms of Capital at Appleseed Permaculture in this episode. There'll be one for every one of these episodes for this series. This is going to be a kick-ass series, so let's get into it, as they say. All right, what I want you to understand is there's 8 forms of capital instead of one. We usually think of financial. That's what we think. When we hear capital, we think money. Today's episode is about intellectual capital. There's social capital. There's experiential capital. There's community capital. There's human capital. There's all types of social capital. We're going to talk about them all. We're going to start with intellectual, which is kind of an easy one because it's one of the few that people actually think about outside of financial capital. We often call it IPR, intellectual property rights. If I write a song, and that song becomes popular, and it gets played on the radio, and there's a royalty every time it's played, and I have part of the copy of that song, and some of that money comes to me, that's an intellectual property right. I have rights to that song. Or a photographer might have rights to a photograph, or a poet might have rights to his poem. And if it's used anywhere, he will get a royalty from it. Or his heirs will even get a royalty for it until it's been around so long that maybe it goes into the public domain. So it's a well-understood business concept. But from the article, I'm going to read a little excerpt from the article for you and then give you kind of a bigger view of it than that and how we actually see, define, and cultivate. See, that's the other reason I want to do permaculture review here. Most people look at their business and they say, well, our capital is X, Y, and Z, and the only capital they cultivate is their financial capital. They don't cultivate their intellectual capital or their social capital, or they wouldn't be asking stupid questions like, what's the ROI on a Facebook fan? That's because they're not cultivating their community capital. We'll get to that one in a later episode. It's just to put you in the right frame of mind. But here's from the article. Intellectual capital is best described as a knowledge asset. The majority of current global education system is focused on imparting intellectual capital. Whether or not it is the most useful form of capital for creating resilient and thriving communities. Having intellectual capital is touted as the surest way to be successful. Science and research can focus on obtaining intellectual capital or truth, though it is often motivated by the desire for financial and social capital. For example, going to university is primarily an exchange of financial capital for intellectual capital. It is supposed to prepare people for the rest of their lives in the world. In other words, for a lot of people that spend lots of money and go into debt for college, it ends up being bullshit and not really making the world a better place. But some people actually do need to be there. What this misses, and I think that if you read the rest of the article, you'll see they actually get into it eventually, is that intellectual capital is not just about the education system. Intellectual capital is really about the knowledge that we personally possess. It's what we know and what we're able to do with what we know. See, intellectual capital, when it's not applied, is completely pointless and useless. I have a lot of what we call Jeopardy knowledge due to my, like, insanely crazy memory. I can sit, and when I mean Jeopardy, I literally mean Jeopardy knowledge. Like, I'll sit down and watch Jeopardy sometime, and as long as it's not pop culture, which I don't give a damn about, all this historical stuff, scientific stuff, literary stuff, and I'll just sit there and go, da-dum, da-da, da-da. And unless I get on Jeopardy, it's really pretty much useless knowledge. It's cool, it's fun, but how do I turn Jeopardy knowledge into true intellectual capital? By speaking and teaching. Because all of that knowledge that I have that seems irrelevant, you'll get on a show either here or at the Survival Podcast or come to an event where I speak, and I'll take this seemingly obscure thing and I'll use it to fix a point of memory in your mind because it's unique and different, and I'll anchor back to it relevant facts and things that you can do based on it as a learning medium. That's one way to look at intellectual capital, and it's a huge advantage in our business from our own intellectual capital. Our own intellectual capital also would include part of my intellectual capital for podcasting. I know how to edit and record podcasts and upload them. I know how to do basic web development, basic web programming. I know how to get content online. I know how to get my stuff onto Facebook and Twitter. I know how to interact with users. These are all forms of intellectual capital. Now, the important thing is that we remember that all capital has value. That's why it's capital. So instead of just focusing on financial capital, which is one of the eight forms, and we'll get to it, it'll probably be the most boring show out of the eight. I'll try to make it exciting. But the big thing is to remember that we need to be nurturing and cultivating all our forms of capital. So this goes back to Ben Franklin saying what? Invest in yourself. So your personal knowledge, and continuing to invest in your personal knowledge so you can do more and more and more with what you have. Okay. Intellectual property rights is another way to look at this. So anything in your business that carries value beyond your business is also intellectual, is intellectual capital. So if you devise software, and that software is used by other companies, let's say you come up with a really cool design software. Here's how to design a business, and people pay for it. And they have to renew it after a certain time, or you do upgrades and have to buy those. That's this ongoing recurrent revenue stream, this residual stream of income that's based on intellectual property rights. That's another way to see IPR. The next thing is, and this is the one that a lot of companies don't realize that they have and they need to be cultivating, the knowledge of your employees or your partners slash contractors. So this is why companies will do things like send you to college. Except they probably should be sending you to college, because in most instances in college you don't actually learn how to run a business. But if I have, and I did this when I had a web developer working for me at Franklin Spearco Media, he said, you know what, man, they have this workshop on PHP, taking your PHP programming to the next level, and you know, he's a great PHP programmer, I wouldn't have hired him in the first place. I think if I go here, it'll help me do a better, go, tell me to get the dates booked, cover your ass while you're gone, get me, and we'll pay for it. When we had Open Camp, I took several of my employees from Franklin Spearco to Open Camp and paid the bill, because I'm investing in their knowledge base, because it's part of the company's intellectual capital. If I have a contractor that I rely on, often like Ben Fitz, I may not directly invest in his capital, because if he tells me, I want to learn how to do X, Y, and Z, I'm going to say, knock yourself out. That's part of being a contractor. You don't get the extra care that an employee does, but you're still part of the team. But I might encourage him to go. I might say, hey, here's a more cost-effective way to get the same thing. Here's somebody that can teach you that, or whatever. I might do whatever I might share what I learn with him, even if he doesn't have a need to know, because he can apply it back into my own business. So I'll provide him with certain levels of trust as he's earning that trust, because I know he's not going to take my internal business secrets and disclose them to somebody else, but he'll use them to do a better job for me. This is building intellectual capital as well. And then there's this is the big one. This is the one that companies are generally too stupid to see, and I don't want you to be the same way. The most valuable form of intellectual capital that your business owns doesn't go on your balance sheet, and it cannot be quantified. And if your business is brand new and you have no customers or audience yet, you don't have it yet, and you're working to cultivate and build it, it's the intellectual capital of your audience. See, that's what most businesses are too stupid to harness. When your customer says, your customer service in this aspect sucks ass. I want to do business with you so much so that even though you suck ass, instead of telling you you suck ass, and leaving, I'm telling you you suck ass and here's a solution, and then we ignore that solution because we know better than the customer. Now, there are things customers do not understand about business operations, about cost of operations, and the bigger the business and the more capital intensive, the greater the delta is. That doesn't mean we shouldn't listen to them and at least consider what they have to say. I can tell you that the value of the intellectual capital that sits on the Survival Podcast server, the almost 1,000 episodes of that show right now, is much greater because of the input of the audience and the community around the show. So I've taken something we're going to get to later, social capital and community capital, and I've used those and converted it to in-house intellectual capital because, folks, that's what a podcast is. That's what a YouTube video is. That's what a blog article is. You understand that if you are in the web marketing world, if you are in the web-based business world, even if you sell widgets and gadgets or potions and lotions in a physical product store online, all of the collateral information, all of the things that you do to market and sell that, video reviews, product reviews, forums that people post into, comments in your blog, articles that you write, getting started things, checklists, anything that you do so that your audience, so that your customer base can then do business with you or get more from you or tell people about you. That's your real IPR. That's your intellectual capital. Your customer database is also your IPR. You understand that when you, and there's going to be a lot of overlap in these episodes because your email list is also part of your social capital, folks, and part of your community capital that we'll get to again later on in the series. Right? But my email list is the most valuable piece of intellectual capital that I own because it's the knowledge of how to reach the people that have already said they want my information and my product. And most businesses are too stupid to even back up and consider that things like your 10,000 fans on Facebook, your 5,000 fans on Twitter, your 12,000 person email list are not just assets from a marketing standpoint alone. They're actually a form of intellectual capital, and as intellectual capital, we need to see them for the knowledge that they provide. And then the marketing department goes and does that, but doesn't understand that's what they're doing. The small business person can look at his entire business and these eight forms of capital and literally create a sustainable business with them. And that's what I'm going to try to get across to you in this series. And hopefully I've done a good job today with introducing you to the first form of capital, intellectual capital. This is why I'm doing this again, sustainability. It's all about sustainability. In October of 2011, I had a conversation with a producer from National Geographic that basically said, I can give you 15 minutes of fame and put you in front of 3,000 people, but you're going to have to compromise your integrity to do so. My responsibility to him was basically take your right hand, form it into a fist, and shove it up your ass until you feel the inside of your skull. Not quite the way I put it, but it was pretty much the response that he got. Why? Because I have a sustainable business. And as somebody with a sustainable business, I get to have, ding, 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 integrity. That's right, integrity. The thing that's lost in America today because people are selling their ass out because they're afraid they can't survive. I don't want that for you. I want your business to be sustainable. I want your business to be so sustainable that you would literally have to salt your fields to screw it up. This is one way to get there. This and the other 100-plus episodes I've given you and the hundreds of episodes I'll be bringing you in the future. Tune in tomorrow for the next form of capital. And again, it won't be financial. We're going to put that one right in the middle because it's the easiest one to understand, and I don't want to bore you early on in the series. And with that, this has been another episode of 5 Minutes with Jack, the ramblings of an insane entrepreneur. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of 5 Minutes with Jack. To learn more, connect with our community, and get free resources to build your business, visit jackspirico.com.